Hello there, one and all, and welcome to this week's edition of The Chat. He's Ralph, I'm Peter, let's do this. Now, we are going to have a right laugh this podcast, I think. Now, we always have a right laugh anyway, but I just think that, you know, well, I mean, I think we're both in fairly feisty moods today, so watch out. Anyway, it's all relative, right?
No idea what that might mean.
At the end of the day, it's just a podcast, so, you know, let's not get too excited about it. But anyway, right, in this week's edition, we're going to talk about the hype cycle, which is not some kind of exciting bicycle. We are also going to be talking about how that actually fits with some news, you know, that we've heard this week in AI and EVs as well, just to keep the acronyms going. With regard to the AI sort of stuff, boiling it down and putting it bluntly, anything to do with AI continues to do extremely well, that we've seen this week with, you know, with some of the big tech companies. The most notable absence of that is Alphabet, where Google has seen, you know, basically been the drag because of poor performance in advertising. But the AI side of things has been extremely good. So we've seen, you know, really good stuff there. You know, Amazon is doing really well with Amazon Web Services. I mean, anything to do with it, chips, anything to do with AI continues to go from strength to strength and is being powered a lot by hype. Then in terms of EVs, we saw a lot of companies reporting. I mean, again, putting it bluntly and looking overall, EVs seem to be running out of steam. So even the mighty BYD is not doing very well. Tesla, you know, they're suffering. They are, you know, they're engaged in a price war at the moment. And the reason why they're in a price war is because demand is slowing down. So there's that. And other companies are, you know, they're sort of withdrawing their eagerness on the march towards electrification. So you've got Renault saying that they have abandoned plans or postponed plans, whatever, to spin off their EV business called Ampere or whatever however you want to see it. So it doesn't matter now because they ain't going to do it. But anyway, so they've ditched those plans. You've got GM saying that they might have gone a bit too early on the electrification thing. So all of this, you know, is all playing out at the moment. So I think that this is a very interesting time. So that's a sort of quick overview on some of the, you know, what we're going to be talking about. So, Ralph, tell us about the hype cycle. let's jump aboard the hype cycle.
Ooh, yeah? Baby. Ooh, yeah. Let's do that. Yes,
yeah,
indeed.
Let's do that.
Can't wait. In fact, the hype, I can't say it without laughing. Actually, I can't say most things without laughing.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's focus on these things now for now. Most of the things you were basically talking about here in your introduction, which is electric vehicles, EV, and of course also artificial intelligence or AI, is something which we can analyze using the model of the hype cycle. And yeah, I know it sounds a little bit odd, but I have been aware of the hype cycle for a while, as many of us have been, I'm sure. And I do find it a useful model to sort of analyze qualitatively new technologies and how they might actually do, how they might actually lead to actionable investment activity, how they will lead to growth and to consumer products which people actually want to buy because they can use them.
Yeah.
So let me maybe first of all delve into the hype cycle. It's something which is...
I love it. You're going to love this. If you don't know what the hype cycle is, you are going to love this. Anyway, sorry, I don't know if I'm building it up too much, but yeah, carry on, please.
Not at all. I'm going to gaze away from you guys again if you're watching this to my screen just to make sure that I get this right. The hype cycle is a model to put into a framework developments connected with new technologies. Mm-hmm. It's developed by information technology company itself called Gartner. So they have the copyright on this particular form of analysis. You guys will have heard of the Porters for Forces model and the SWOT analysis, which Peter and I once eviscerated several years ago.
Yeah.
But it's this sort of thing. It's the hype cycle, it's a model, it's a qualitative model. It doesn't actually offer any quantitative metrics which you can calculate. So it's not specific or precise. It's not quantitative, but it is qualitative and it helps. Mm. So let me explain what it does. So in general, we all know what it does. In general, what it is it's looking at a new technology that everybody gets exaggerated expectations of what that technology might do. Then they get disappointed when they realize that none of these expectations actually come to bear. And then they sort of readjust and moderate their expectations, and then it becomes a commercial product, and then we're moving into the real world. So
by the way, can I just say that the way you describe it there makes it sound like it could be applicable to lots of different things. new jobs, relationships, I mean everything really.
No, I agree. It's completely true. Relationships as well. Right.
Really excited. Not quite what I expected. It's going to require a bit more work, you know. Yeah. That sort of thing. Anyway, sorry.
I'm sure we can adapt it to relationships specifically in a special podcast.
Yeah.
But not for now.
Mm-hmm.
Right, guys, here we go. The hype cycle, as developed by Gartner, they probably have copyright on all these various technical terms which are associated with this cycle. So at the start of the cycle, we have a new technology coming out. Mm-hmm. Gartner called that the technology trigger. Obviously, what is being triggered here are expectations of what this technology might actually bring to society in terms of products and welfare and what else it might do.
Mm.
These expectations then mount and increase very swiftly. So for you guys who are looking at this on YouTube or elsewhere, I'm going to illustrate this for you. So my finger describes a curve upwards here. Mm-hmm. And as my finger goes up, we are going through something which will now, as I'm getting to the peak, reach what Gartner is calling the peak of inflated expectations.
I don't know, so many people are going to be able to relate to this. Anyway, sorry, carry on.
So we're having the technology trigger, which triggers off the expectations, and then they're becoming more and more exaggerated, and then they're peaking, and that is when we reach the peak of inflated expectations. This reminds me of the Lord of the Rings, basically.
Yes, exactly. It is, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so then we are, this is a turning
Frodo, watch out for the peak of expectations.
Absolutely.
It's just over there. Sorry, I reached your sharp. I think it's these. I mean, whoever thought of these terms, absolute genius. But anyway,
it gets better, guys. Don't put the kettle on. Stay with me. Right. Peak of inflated expectations. Also, this gives me opportunity to get on my soapbox and correct something which people always get wrong. People, meaning people we have all encountered in the city of London, because this now is the peak, which means now we are getting from upwards motion to downwards motion.
Mm-hmm.
The peak is a turning point, guys. It's not an inflation point.
Inflection. It's your favorite thing, this, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. An inflection point.
Yeah.
It's not an inflection point. An inflection point is not a turning point. When something goes up, stops going up, and then goes down, that's a turning point. How can we remember this? Well, it's in the bloody expression. That was unnecessarily florid. it's turning. So it's a turning point. It's not an inflection point. It doesn't matter. Completely irrelevant. I'm just getting excited about things which don't matter to most people. Yes. So, okay. Anyway, so we are technology trigger going up. We have reached the peak of inflated expectations. Now what is going to happen is that we're going to start getting disappointed that the expectations which we had are not met by reality. And as we are sliding down the curve, we are reaching the second bottom here, or the second turning point, the bottom. And this Gartner calls the trough of disillusionment.
Oh, this is so good. Oh, like when basically, to be honest, I'd sort of vaguely heard of this before, but when you were describing this and you went through each one, I'm like, this is like Dungeons and Dragons or something, or Warhammer or whatever. Yeah.
But anyway, totally. It's lovely.
I'm eating from the trough of whatever. Anyway, sorry.
Now we are at the trough of, my voice hopefully gets darker here, because it is, in fact, imbued with doom. We are now at the trough of disillusionment. We are all seeking mental help from psychologists because we are so disappointed that our exaggerated expectations have not been fulfilled. Now we have, however, indeed touched rock bottom. We have touched the trough of disillusionment, from where we are now going to recover, and we are again moving into the ascendant phase. Mm-hmm. So now we are going up again, but we are not going to go quite as much up as we were before. And that's a good thing, because remember, you possibly forgot this because I've only said it five times. Remember, that was the peak of inflated expectations. We're not going to go back to that peak. We're now going to move up in a more measured way, as the technologies which were triggered before we started this journey, or at the start of this journey, are in fact maturing to their actual potential. And now they are offering commercially viable uses, products which people actually wish to purchase because they actually can use them in the way they are supposed to work in their real lives.
Yeah.
And as we are now walking upwards, so to speak, in this more measured way, what we are doing here is we are climbing what Gartner calls the slope of, the slope of enlightenment.
This is so good. I'm going to use this in my life. Yeah. Yeah.
So we are moving up the slope of enlightenment. And as this is sort of topping out and becoming more sustained, less growth, but more sustained, then we have reached what they call the plateau of productivity.
Nice.
So there it is. That's the hype cycle. We start with a technology trigger, move rapidly up to the peak of inflated expectations, from which we descend to the disillusioned trough.
The trough of disillusionment, yeah.
Which is the trough of disillusionment, as we all know.
And then we all
recover from there at a more moderate pace, moving up the slope of enlightenment, topping out at the plateau of productivity.
Ah, so good.
Right. So that's what that is. Now, let me just fill that in a little bit more with not actual examples yet. I'm going to do that as well. But just a little bit what markers do we have which would indicate to us where we are on the hype cycle? The technology trigger, that's obvious. We read in the papers that some new stuff has been invented. Maybe it's fusion technology, which we, of course, love to talk about. Or maybe it is specifically the technologies which we've been referencing at the start in Peter's introduction, which is in the electric vehicles and AI. So this is the technology trigger. Now we are having some sort of expectations are forming. The first startup companies are moving into the first round of venture capital gathering. This is what is associated with an early stage of the of the rise to the to the peak of expectations as expectations are building. Then we have the first generation products. They are associated or characterized typically by a very high price. Nobody can afford these things really, and they have not. They still have teething problems. They still need to be customized, etc. We have early adopters who are buying this stuff because they love technology and maybe because they have funds available, which allows them to buy this. And if they go wrong, they don't mind so much. And then we have mass media hype. This is the accelerator. In the olden days, I think Gartner developed this a little bit even before social media started. So in the olden days before social media, that would just be print media and television, and journalists might be sensationalizing this. In this day and age, it is accelerated even more by the sort of echo chambers of social media start ringing, basically. You have YouTube people doing videos on all manner of things, accelerating the hype, accelerating the expectations. And then basically we have a situation that now we are turning the turning point. Now we have negative press. The negative press begins saying, oh, this was not actually as good as we were expected to be, etc. Now we're coming down towards the trough of disillusionment, remind you. And then we have news flow, which talks about some of these products are failing, perhaps in spectacular ways. Maybe an electric vehicle is involved in a spectacular accident where you had a hot burning fire from the battery, things which are not typically envisaged when the technology trigger happened. All this is now accelerating. The press is picking up on that. And just as the accelerated inflation happens, now we have an accelerated deceleration, if that still makes sense. We're sliding down more as quickly as we were moving up. And then what happens is that we get second generation products. And when we get second generation products, that typically is associated with the start of the slope of enlightenment. Yes. We have gone through the pain, so to speak, and now we are ready to become more mature in our expectations. And as we are now more measured in our expectations, what this technology is going to generate, and as the technology has had time to go through its teething problems and present more usable, commercially viable products, we get second generation services and they actually work. And this produces sustainable growth, which is sustainable for a while, for a time, for a longer time than it has taken for us to go to the peak and down. And that is the sustainable phase where growth is manifesting itself. And this is the phase where most of the share price reality, to the extent that these technologies are investable or retail investors, is going to happen. And then, of course, all of this is eventually all technologies are going to be mature. And that's where we are not going to see or and commensurately expect growth to continue at this pace. So that is sort of how, how these various aspects, phases of the cycle can be identified. And now maybe we can move into the actual things which we wish to discuss, which is EVs and...
Well, I think before that, you were mentioning before when we were chatting before about, you know, 3D printing, which is a really great example of something that we've seen. See, because I would say that at the moment we are in the early stages of that hype cycle for AI and EVs, whereas actually you can see perhaps we are, you know, we are now in the upturn bit. We are climbing the mountain of
enlightenment.
Climbing the mountain of enlightenment for the 3D printing, because again, like a few years ago, like for instance, I read this I thought it was a really good book called Bend Not Break by someone called Ping Fu. She was massive into 3D technology, was huge in it. Everyone was loving 3D technology. I remember everyone saying, well, this is going to transform manufacturing. You're not going to have to ship parts everywhere. You can just print out, let's say, like an aeroplane part. You can print out you can print out things like Boeing, let's say, for example, could potentially print out something that stops its doors popping open, for instance. Wouldn't that be useful? So things like that. I remember everyone was talking about, oh yes, of course, we're going to be printing our own food, all this. And there was so much hype about it. And it was one of these things, oh no, it's not this year, next year. And actually, we have gone through this expectation. We've gone through the trough of disappointments, and now, like I say, we are on this. I mean, it's a very interesting thing, and I thought that was a really good example that you gave actually of that. But
because also you see the 3D printing, I think we all still remember the hype. The hype signals. You mentioned all of them. We can just print our stuff and it's all going to be decentralized and people in Africa are going to be fantastically happy because all you need is an internet connection. Then every village in Africa can just basically print what they need. No worries. Happy days. That then didn't quite work. And one other thing which is associated with the hype cycle, I think, is when we know that we are sort of going down to the trough of disillusionment is when we can almost no longer remember the hype. And when somebody mentions the signals of the hype, we all go like, oh yeah, but that didn't work, did it? It's when we forget that this kind of stuff existed, then it's the slope of enlightenment. So 3D printing specifically has actually developed in a very material way. It just develops outside of the public spotlight, and because a lot of these technologies, they have to be incorporated into manufacturing processes. You can't just simply print something in an isolated way and then use it. The printed items have to be produced just in time. The things and the infrastructure have to be available and have to be integrated on the shop floor in a manufacturing business. And then they have to be incorporated in a meaningful way into the strategy of the product as it is being manufactured on the shop floor. And that apparently is happening now. This is not really in the public eye, and also mass media cannot sensationalize this as much, so it doesn't help them sell copy, which is why it doesn't capture headlines, but it definitely is happening.
Yeah, no, definitely.
And so if we turn back to the Gartner, they have also done one other chart where they put some general technologies on the hype cycle. And it's quite interesting. I'll just read out a few to you. Excuse me. There is generative design AI, which is just at the face of the technology trigger. So this is just at the bottom of the peak of inflated expectations. We're not nearly there yet. Machine learning and code generation is there. The metaverse is there. Digital humans are there, which I don't think we have time for me to go into what that exactly is, but this is in fact something which does have a lot of potential. This is halfway up the rise towards the peak here. And interestingly, what is just beyond the turning point? Technologies which are sliding down to the trough of disillusionment are NFT. And do you not have this psychological reaction to when I say NFT? When I saw that, I thought, oh, NFT, oh yeah, that was something which was once hype, but whatever. It's disappeared. It was a technology which didn't really work, which didn't really generate anything. And so they didn't put EVs here, but I would guess that electric vehicles are somewhere still on the first upward slope. We haven't quite reached the peak of expected expectations, but if I was to populate this particular chart, then I'm inclined to put EVs close-ish to the top of the peak of expected of inflated expectations.
Mm.
And I would put AI almost where they put it, somewhere on the still, excuse me, my voice. We haven't really seen from where we are in AI. We haven't really seen the peak yet.
Mm. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think it's such an interesting way to look at it. I think this and you know, I think with AI, there's still a long way to go. And as you sort of briefly kind of touched upon there, I mean, that I think if last year, so this sort of chimes well with one of the themes that we're talking about for 2024, and that's in, you know, Watson's Yearly and everything. And that is all about how, so if last year was where everyone, you know, the public discovered AI, this year is going to be where there's going to be more movement towards commercializing the use of AI. Yes. So one of the things I've mentioned is, for instance, what about LinkedIn? You know, the fact that LinkedIn is owned by Microsoft, Microsoft invests in OpenAI, and, you know, LinkedIn has always effectively wanted to be the ultimate sort of search engine, I think, you know, in terms of recruitment. So you don't need recruitment agencies. You can, you know, if your AI is good enough, then you can bypass all of that. So, I mean, I think that, so there's that. I mean, you were talking about synths, weren't you?
Yes. Yeah, synths are basically is what Gartner calls digital humans. I mean, I just described the concept briefly. This is currently used in the world of marketing and gathering data for marketing purposes. So currently, or before the world of digital humans, what you needed to do is sit people down in sort of fact-finding, they have a name, I forgot what it is now, in sort of fact-finding meetings, and you ask people, would you like this product better in a yellow packaging or in a gray packaging? What do you think of this?
Focus group sort of thing.
Thank you. That's exactly right. Focus groups. But of course, it costs money to organize focus groups and to do all this, and people have to be there on the premises in person. They have to be in some form of enclosed room where you have recording facilities, etc. So it does take just physical infrastructure to do that. A digital human or synth is basically, again, an LLM, a large language model, which has access to data which simulates what a human being would respond to were they asked the question, what do you like about this product or what don't you like? It's this sort of thing. So one LLM specifically tailored program replaces a focus group. And since you can, of course, ask this AI these kind of questions all the time, it replaces repeated organization of focus groups. And companies are already using this, and they're paying actual money in the real world for this. So digital humans or synth are maybe, I mean, I don't know what Gartner's thought process was to put it on the ascendant. We were still on the sort of way towards the peak of exaggerated expectations here. But I think digital humans, some of them, are already offering a usable product, a usable service. What we don't know about the hype cycle is the timescale over which we are traveling through these various parts of the curve. We might get to the peak very quickly, and the trough might not be as much as pronounced, and we might move towards the sustainable productivity plateau more quickly. And so in AI specifically, I would expect the next several years to be the years where we're moving onto the slope of enlightenment, so to speak, in the hype cycle, by which I mean that specific commercially viable purposes are being found for AI, which are potentially offered with a corporate envelope. For example, one company manufacturing marketing digital humans, allowing them to be customized in the way companies need. And that sort of business would then be investable for retail investors. As these type of businesses become investable for retail investors, that is again like opening the door to a raging fire, putting oxygen into something which has already growth. And that is when, well, okay, my metaphor would suggest it would explode, but let us be more measured here. That is when we have a real value, a real world product development. And I think that may not be as far away as the general length of the hype cycle would suggest. I think that can happen in AI in a few years. Whereas in electric vehicles, it's probably a little bit different.
I mean, I think certainly in electric vehicles, one of the things that prompted me to talk about this week is the fact that, you know, Volvo, it seems to be calling on, on Polestar. And then you've got Tesla not doing, Tesla and BYD slugging it out with all the, with trying to attract buyers of electric vehicles. Then you've got, was it GM was saying it was worried about whether it was, you know, had gone too much towards electrification. You had Renault with ditching, you know, the whole ampere whatever, you know, that kind of thing. All of it just seems to suggest, and then you've got the delay, so Sunak delaying the deadline from 2030 to 2035. And then you've got rumors at the moment that actually, so it wasn't, I think it was the Porsche CFO said he was thinking of delaying, that he reckoned that that delay, that 2035 in Europe, could be delayed further. So all of this suddenly, and if you have that happening with a backdrop of cost of living crisis, where people are thinking, what are we going to do with our money? Is buying an electric vehicle going to be at the top of that list? And given how expensive they are, even though actually these days you can get a pretty chunky discount, still they're too much money for many people to buy. And so that is going to hold them back. And you know, I mean, ultimately, I think there's going to have to be either big cuts, and or there's going to be a merging of operations, maybe of some companies in some geographies, or but especially in maybe China, I think there's going to be, you know, consolidation of the whole industry, because there's quite a lot of these electric vehicle companies. So there's going to have to, This kind of thing is going to have to happen, because I don't see people adopting EVs overnight, especially now that the deadline for petrol cars is so far out into 2035 and could get delayed further. But yeah,
Indeed, I think as we were earlier talking about marking out some events which indicate where we are on the hype cycle, we can take some of these events which you referenced in your chat right now on electric vehicles and put those on the hype cycle. I mean, to me, particularly important are is the pulling of IPOs, the pulling of EV related IPOs. Toyota did, not Toyota, Renault did it, and Volvo. And that to me is the sort of negative news flow which you find when you've turned the turning point. We're turning the peak of expectations, and arguably we are on the way to the trough of disillusionment here. Because companies, of course, are in this to make money, and they wish to maximize profits. The logic of an IPO is always the same. A company believes that the growth potential of a part of its business is not recognized and acknowledged by the stock markets. So you carve that particular business out, you give it a separate listing and allow investors to go into it, and that is when they hope the growth potential is going to be reflected in the price.
Mm. Absolutely.
Renault and also Volvo
Polestar did float.
It did float. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, let's link it to Renault.
Yeah,
it did float, but I don't think it's doing as well as they were expecting to.
No.
So Renault
it did initially, but then it's absolutely collapsed since. But anyway, sorry, Karen.
Indeed. So Renault was trying to do that, and of course the idea was that there is all this growth potential there.
Mm.
Volvo has found that it wasn't. Renault has basically, wouldn't be surprised if they looked at that and thought, let's pull it because it's not the time. But of course, both of it was fueled by exaggerated expectations of growth. And this is actually where stock market terminology matches Gartner's terminology for the hype cycle. Exaggerated expectations of earnings growth to be generated by EV businesses were factored into the decision to IPO a business, and in the case of Volvo, didn't really quite come to fruition. In the case of Renault, they were being pulled. So these two news flows, if that was all I knew about EV, would sort of suggest that I put the position of these vehicles just beyond the peak of exaggerated inflation expectation on the hype cycle. And so all the rest which you referenced is sort of the infrastructure around it. I think the industry is going through teething problems because we haven't really seen what the reality is like. We don't know what the consumer is going to think of the cost, whether they are going to be able to afford it. I mean, we do know that currently they are not able to afford it. All of this, of course, sits in a wider envelope of macro. Currently we have high inflation and et cetera, cost of living is sky high, so the demand for these vehicles is less. The policies around it, which were inflating the demand, are being pushed out in terms of 2035. You reference these. China is going through economic problems, and we haven't even seen yet cost of insurance related to battery fires in these cars and all of this kind of stuff. This still has to percolate down. It has to come through. Policies and car makers will deal with that, and that is, I think, what is currently happening. And I can't put a number on it in terms of years, but of course we are going to see several more years, I think, before we reached the trough of disillusionment. And then, however, because I am absolutely convinced that electric vehicles are a viable technology, it is just that we have not reached the commercial viability of this technology yet. When is it going to be? 2035? And beyond is probably going to be a sensible time to put on it, just simply because that's a policy item which will mark the demand for it.
Fair enough. Well, there we go. I think that's a good place to end. You know, hopefully that we are, you know, that listening to this podcast, you are, don't feel that you are in the trough of disappointment, and that you are, in fact, always on the upward slope to the mountain of what was it again?
With these podcasts, guys, you're always on the slope of enlightenment.
There we go, the slope of enlightenment. Anyway, on that bombshell, let's leave. But thank you very much indeed. Have a great
Thanks for listening, guys. Thank you very much.
Bye.